join. Lord, I thank you for these people. I thank you for this church. That from the first day you formed it back in the 80s, that it has been a church moved by volunteers, moved by servants who give their lives away. That virtually everything we do, Lord, has started and comes and is through someone giving their life away. Lord, these folks are the answer to prayers. Lord, you said that if there was a need for harvesters, if there was a need for workers in the field to pray, and the Lord of the harvest would provide. And these are the folks are the answers to prayer, both in our church and in our city and in our world. Lord, because of these folks, there are kids that are hearing the good news of Jesus every week and being taught from His Word. And because of these folks, there are people who have clean drinking water all over. But because of the folks in this church, there are small groups that are being led and nurtured, and people are being shepherded and cared for. Because of these people, Lord, there are women and men that are being taught your word. And because of these people, Lord, your reputation is being lifted up. And they are destroying the stereotype of the Christian who doesn't care and is sour. And they are sacrificially and joyfully giving their lives away. And so, Lord, I'm grateful for everyone. I'm grateful that we get to partner together in building your kingdom. And so, Lord, I know you smile upon these folks today. And I pray that they would sense your joy. That they would sense that confidence of well done, good and faithful servant. That as they lay it down for you and give their lives away for you, that they would feel and sense the joy and the gratitude even of heaven. And so, Lord, thank you for them. Lord, as we open up your word, I pray that you'd speak to us today. In your name we pray. Amen. You know, sometimes Sundays like this come together in unexpected ways. Ways we didn't really see getting started when we began to plan all these things. This Sunday is one of those. You know, 2 or 3 months ago, we started thinking we needed to do something to celebrate volunteers. And so the day kind of bounced around in the calendar until it finally settled on today, November 16th. And we started moving towards that over the last couple of months, getting things prepared, people volunteering and whatnot. And I didn't bother to look back at our plan for Luke. You know, but about 10 days ago, I was starting to look ahead to this week, figure out where am I headed. And I looked at the passage for this morning, and I went, oh my goodness, Lord, this is perfect. But because the passage we're going to look at today is really about a group of volunteers. It's really about Jesus' ministry team and what they were doing. And this is, the passage for today is a key passage for Jesus sending his guys out. And wrapped up in it is all kinds of principles about how ministry works. And so we're going to look at that. And what's going on in Luke chapter 9, just to give you a little background, is that beginning in Luke chapter 9, there's this turning that we're going to see. And beginning in Luke chapter 9, Jesus is beginning to look towards the cross. We haven't really heard anything about the cross yet, but in this chapter, it's going to happen. And what Jesus is doing is he's looking down the road to maybe less than a year from where he is, and he knows that in a year, he's going away. He's crystal clear what's going to happen to him. He can see the forces coming together. Matter of fact, we're going to get a hint of that in this morning's passage. And so Jesus knows that before long, he's out of the picture. And his work of world redemption, his work of world transformation is going to get carried on by somebody else. He's going to mobilize an army of people who are then going to take that message out. And so what he's doing in the passage this morning is he's taking his people, those first century apostles and disciples, and he's training them, he's mobilizing them, he's moving them into ministry. And as we listen to what he teaches them, he teaches us so that we too can be used by him in our world today. And so there's all kinds of principles that come out of this passage that shape how we do ministry, how you serve the Lord. And so I'm pretty fired up about that because you can see the sending of the 12, we'll look at that first. That's Jesus taking his guys and sending them out on mission. Then at the end of the passage, you can see it on the outline, it's the feeding of the 5,000. And really what this boils down to is a ministry opportunity for the 12. And then sandwiched in between is this kind of sobering moment that deals with what the opposition headed Jesus' way. And so let's look. I'm going to give you three principles out of the sending of the 12 and three from the feeding of the 5,000 and one from the interlude. All right? So let's look at the sending of the 12. Chapter 9, verse 1 says, when Jesus had called the 12 together, he gave them power and authority. Power is the capacity, the ability, the energy, the strength. And they've got the power of Jesus in them. The authority is the right to use it. Okay? It's the right to use it. And so Jesus is preparing them, deputizing them. All right? So he says, I give you power and authority to drive out all demons and to cure disease. And he sent them out to proclaim the kingdom of God and to heal the sick. He told them, take nothing for the journey. No staff, no bag, no bread, no money, no extra shirt. Whatever house you enter, stay there until you leave that town. And if people do not welcome you, leave their town and shake the dust off your feet as a testimony against them. So they set out and went from village to village proclaiming the good news and healing people everywhere. So you can see what's going on. Jesus is gathering the guys together, saying, we're going to go to work now. So up until this moment, Jesus has been doing everything, and they're watching. Now it's a moment where he's saying, now you're going to work, and he's sending them out. One of the first principles I want you to see this morning that shapes how you do ministry and we do ministry is that ministry is a team sport. Jesus didn't go to each of the disciples one by one. He said, I've got a job for you, and I've got a job for you, and I've got a job for you. He pulled them all together. The other Gospels tell us that he sent the disciples out two by two, and he sent them out together. because that's his plan. Jesus, matter of fact, Jesus didn't do ministry by himself. I mean, we kind of think Jesus is out there, this lone ranger doing stuff, but you know, realize, I mean, we've already seen it as we've gone through Luke. One of the first things Jesus did is gather up a group of guys. He has his own ministry team, so that we very rarely find Jesus doing anything alone. He's always doing it with others. And of course, there's reasons for that. Because if you're by yourself, you burn out. If you're by yourself, you have your gifts and your weaknesses, but that's all we're going to get. Whereas if there's a team, we get multiplied gifts, and we're covering up each other's weaknesses because we can fill in the gaps on this thing, right? And so Jesus did nothing by himself. Matter of fact, at the end of the last week's passage, look back at chapter 8, verse 51. Remember how that ended? In Luke chapter 8, verse 51, because remember, we had the storm, we had the calming of the storm, and then we had the demon-possessed guy, and then we had Jairus' daughter who was going to die and be resurrected. We had the woman with the blood flow. But when they get to Jairus' house, verse 51, it says this. It says, let me get the right page here. It says, when he arrived at the house of Jairus, he did not let anyone go with him except Peter, John, and James, and the child's father and mother. I could kind of get it if you went and said, I just want mom and dad, that's all. I could kind of get it if you said, all right, all my followers, you guys come on in. The 12, all of us in there. Maybe the room's too small. But he brings three, Peter, James, and John. Why? Maybe you asked that question in your small group last week. Why? Why those three guys? Are those three guys getting the special bennies in the deal, the special benefits? They're the inner circle. Do they need special training for what's coming up down the road? You know what I think it is? One of the things you pick up as you read through the Gospels is that these guys seem to be Jesus' closest friends. In a week or two, we're going to look at the Mount of Transfiguration, this moment when Jesus goes up on the mountain. And he ultimately does that to be encouraged by the Father to go to the cross. He's at a real troubling time in his life, this where the cost is ahead of him. He sees what's coming. And he takes Peter, James, and John, I think, because he needs those guys with him. When they find out the tomb is empty, it's Peter and John that run to the tomb. It's John that keeps calling himself, you know, the beloved disciple. There's something going on here. But what I see is that Jesus doesn't do ministry by himself. It's just too stinking hard. Ministry is not just physical, it is spiritual, it is emotional, it is all of things in there. And you cannot do it by yourself. If you do it by yourself, you burn out. You know, around here at Trinity all the time, if there's a ministry that's going to get launched, or we're going to do something, a program, whatever it is, we never do anything without a ministry champion. If there's not somebody who owns it, if there's not somebody who wakes up thinking about it, we just never do it. But as soon as we have a ministry champion, the very next thing we say is, we're still not starting until you put together a team. Because it takes a team to get it done. That's why in Ecclesiastes chapter 4, it says two are better than one, and then ultimately it says a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. When you fall, there's somebody to pick you up. You know, and so ministry is a team sport. And when you serve alone, some of you are doing all these things for the Lord by yourself. And you're probably worn out. You're not working the way God intended to do it. It's a team deal. Second principle I see in here is this, is that we are called, deputized, and sent to the hurting, the hungry, and the lost. We are called, deputized, or prepared, and sent to the hurting, the hungry, and the lost. I realize this is a passage for the 12. This little mission trip, it's for the 12. It's for the 12 apostles. They're completely different. We're not apostles, but we're disciples. And all over Scripture, the things that happen here are echoed in us. We're called. We're prepared. We're empowered. We are sent. And so what's going on here is that Jesus is showing us what it looks like for a ministry. He called them. He gave them what they needed, the resources. And then He sent them out. And He sent them to the hurting, and we looked at that, the curing of disease, the demon-possessed. He sent them to the hungry. We'll see that in the feeding of the 5,000 in a minute. He sent them to the lost. That's why they're proclaiming the gospel, it says in verse 2. And here's kind of this overarching principle here. And the overarching principle is that Jesus' plan for reaching the world is not some great program. His plan was people. Isn't it fascinating that Jesus sent us no real blueprint on that's why there's so many different kinds of churches. Because there's no real crystal clear blueprint on what a church ought to look like. There's no real crystal clear blueprint on what ministry ought to look like, how we should do it, what we should do, when we should do it. Because His plan is people. To call people to Himself, give them the resources they need, and then send them out to the needs, to send them out to the hurting and the hungry and the lost, to real people doing real things to meet real needs for real folks. His plan is people. His plan is you. We don't need better programs. We don't need, you know, some grandiose thing. What we need are people used by God to build relationships and to point them to Jesus and do what they can to meet the needs. And that's really what He says. I'm going to send you into these towns. What did He do? Go to the towns and see what needs to be done. Build the relationships and love. You're His plan. You are His plan. Now Marty's out of town this weekend, and she's the volunteer driver and kind of had the driving force behind all that we did. So don't tell her what I'm about to tell you. There is this whole idea of volunteering is a little bit of a dangerous idea. The idea of a volunteer is someone who says, hey, I choose to be in, right? It's the idea of Jesus standing up in front of the 12 saying, hey, anybody willing to go? And one of the 12 kind of going, well, sure, I'll go. What the heck? But that's really not what's going on, is it? It's really not a volunteer. A volunteer has the idea of, well, I can choose to do it or I can choose not to do it. I can opt to do it or opt not to do it. But Jesus has called every one of us as His servants. You are His witnesses. You are His ambassadors. You are His co-laborers. It's not an optional gig. It's not that some of us follow Christ and serve and some of us follow Christ and don't. We're all called, just like here, to serve. Jesus didn't ask for volunteers. He drafted these guys and sent them in. And so we have to be careful. As much as I love the whole morning and the volunteer appreciation and the food, the little buttons are super cool, and I like all that. It's a nice term. But if we're not careful, we get the idea that, well, if I feel like serving, I can. And if I don't feel like serving, I don't have to. But the truth is, you were called as a servant. It's really not an optional gig for a follower of Christ. There's not just the Christians and then the super Christians that serve. It's all of us. And we're all called to the hurting. And we're all called to the hungry. And we're all called to the lost. And God shaped you for a ministry. He made you for a purpose so that you could be part of His kingdom. So I'm grateful that we've done that. And it's harder to, you know, like, we couldn't have really had a have-to appreciation weekend. That wouldn't have worked real well, so volunteer kind of goes. But anyway, you get what I'm saying on this deal? I think it's a dangerous word if we carry it to what it really means, as opposed to being just, we're called servants of Christ. Okay, now, as I imagine this scene here, as I kind of envision how this whole thing was going on, that Jesus calls the 12, right? He's got the guys around, and he starts to tell them, and you see what, okay, I'm gonna give you power, and I'm going to give you authority, and you're going to banish demons, and we're going to make all these sick people well, and we're going to go out, and people are going to come to Christ, and people are going to invite you into their homes. They're going to love you in the villages. And I can kind of envision, if this were me, maybe not you, if this were me, and that's, I'm going to start puffing up just a wee bit here, right? I'm going to go, cool. Yeah, Jesus, I got this thing. I'm in, right? And I can kind of pick, you know, and if Jesus, I'm kind of a little circling, he's looking over at this part, I'm giving this guy over here a little subtle knuckle, right? Because I'm kind of fired up. We're going to go do some, we're going to go make some stuff happen for Jesus. You know, it's kind of interesting. In verses 1 and 2, we get a summary of what Jesus is saying. It just says, well, he told him this, and he told him that, but we don't get a quote. Verse 3, we get a quote because it just turns unexpected. Take a look. He says, look, and he says, take nothing for the journey, no staff, nothing to make the trip easier. No bag, you don't get any luggage, no suitcase, no nothing. No bread, no snacks, no goodies, no nothing else. No little, you know, trail mix for the road. No money, you're not going to be able to buy a single thing as you go. No extra shirt, you're going to wear the clothes you got on until you come back. Which is another issue in and of itself. And he says, whatever house you enter, whatever it is, whoever will invite you in, you're at their mercy. You stay there until you leave that town. And if people don't welcome you, and I assume they won't, then you leave the town and shake the dust off your feet. And so all of a sudden, in my mind, I see these disciples going, this is so cool. And then kind of going, oh, no. That's not what I thought. And so here's your principle, okay? Is that what I have to offer is not nearly as important as who I have. Jesus sends them out empty-handed on purpose. He sends them out so that they won't be dependent on their stuff. They won't be dependent on their skills. They won't be dependent on their abilities. They are totally dependent on Him. And it's not what you have. It's not all your skills. It's not all your abilities that matter. It's Jesus Christ. And He sends them out empty so that every day, every morning they wake up going, wow, what do we do today? Jesus, you better provide. And so I think there's this kind of gut check moment where they're going, wow, we're going empty. You know, for a bunch of years, I've led and sent probably 6-7 groups to Waco, Texas, to this place called Mission Waco to do a poverty simulation. And my buddy Jimmy Doral runs this gig. It's a great thing. And a poverty simulation is an opportunity for you to go over, people to go and to experience and to learn about poverty and what it does in our world and how it's an injustice and needs change. And I've led a bunch of groups, especially when I was a youth pastor. And so the cool thing is it's you tell everybody, you promote the deal, get everybody to sign up. And then they pack all their goodies. They get their suitcases all ready. They get all their stuff together. And then we load them all up in a van and we drive them over to Waco. And then we meet somewhere, wherever, in the house or the office, whatever. And the leader, usually Jimmy, somebody else, stands up and says, hey, welcome. This weekend's going to be great. You're going to learn all about poverty. We're going to help you understand what's going on. We're going to help you understand what people are experiencing. We're gonna, all this kind of stuff. And so in order to help you experience, it won't be a class. You get to truly experience. And so out of all of the suitcases you packed, all of the stuff you brought, you get to keep two items. Any two items you want. And usually there's a quiet moment as the group absorbs this. And then they'll say something that's like, well, we get to keep our sleeping bag, right? And somebody will say, well, if that's the item you want. Well, I get to keep a change of clothes for tomorrow, right? If that's the item you want. Then somebody will always mail off and go, do I get to keep my toothbrush? And the answer is always, if that's the item you want. But if you keep your toothbrush as a bonus, we throw in toothpaste. You know, and what about clean underwear? You get how this is going. And on and on and on to where all of a sudden it settles in that you know, you can, I did it every time, so I knew what was coming. And you could just see their faces kind of fall. And shock would roll over them. And their mouth would kind of hang over. And they're thinking, are you kidding me? And then I would see the look of, how do I get out of this mess? And it, which was always followed by the look of, Dennis, I hate you. Right? And so... But we take all their stuff away. And then someone would try to power up. Well, I'm going to call my mother. And we'd say, well, that's fine. Tell her to come get you. But anyway, that's another issue. And then we would tell them, look, not only that, all your money goes away.
and we're going to give you monopoly money that is the equivalent of what a single mom with two kids lives on a daily basis. And you're going to have to use that to buy stuff. So like if you want breakfast, it's got to come out of that money. If we go somewhere across town and you need a ride, you have to pay for that ride. If you want a shower, if you want a bed, whatever it may be, you know. And we did let them go to the bathroom for free because that's, you know, we don't mess anything up. But you see where I'm going with this thing? And there wasn't enough money to go around. And they always had to draw some cards like a child is sick, got to go to the doctor, and they had to pay extra money. There's never enough money for the weekend. And then ultimately we would send them out Saturday for lunch with nothing and say, find it. Just go find lunch. Either don't eat or figure something out. And it's amazing what people would do to eat. But not only did it give them a deeper understanding of poverty and what people really grapple with, it drove them to Jesus to say, how do I make it through this? It teaches you dependence. That's what Jesus is doing here. Take a look at the quote by Alexander McLaren at the top of your outline. This is deep and profound and needs to soak in a little bit. He said, it is often our God-given duty to attempt tasks to which we are conspicuously inadequate, in the confidence that he who gives them has laid them on us to drive us to himself and there to find sufficiency. Think about that. That Jesus sent them on mission, and you, to things that you are unbelievably inadequate, so that you would be driven to Jesus and find that he is all that you need. That's powerful. And some of you are there right now. Some of you are involved in some stuff with the Lord. You're thinking, I don't know what to do. But he does. And it's designed to draw you to himself. So that's the first story. Then we get this little interlude, this foreboding interlude about Herod. Look at verse 7. It says, now Herod the Tetrarch heard about all that was going on, and he was perplexed because some were saying that John the Baptist had been raised from the dead. Others said that Elijah had appeared, and still others that one of the prophets of long ago had come back to life. But Herod said, wait a minute, I beheaded John. Who then is this I hear such things about? And he tried to see him. And we're back to that basic question of Luke, who is this guy? But it's never a good idea to stir up a bloodthirsty and powerful despot. Right? I mean, it's one thing to get the religious leaders to notice you like Jesus had and kind of have them ticked off at you. It's a totally different animal when the most powerful man in the region, when one of the most bloodthirsty men in the region is suddenly paying attention to you and you're making him confused and nervous. And these verses are a foreshadowing. They're telling us what's coming. That if Herod could behead John, then Jesus is at risk. If Herod could execute John, then Jesus is at risk. And it's telling us where we're headed towards the cross. And I think Luke inserts this right here because the sending of the 12, that's all about ministry. The feeding of the 5,000, that's all about ministry. And he inserts this thing about Herod for this message, is that ministry will always face spiritual and personal opposition. If you're going to serve Jesus, you will be in a battle. If you're gonna, and it doesn't matter where you are, it doesn't matter how big or how small, whatever the thing is, if all ministry is engaged in spiritual battle. Our fight is not against flesh and blood, but against powerful spiritual forces that hate Jesus. The moment you sign on, the moment you get in the game, you've put a target on your back that says, enemy. There will be, as we've already seen, there will be homes and there will be towns that will reject you and want to throw you out. There will be powerful people that do not like the changes that you are bringing. Think back to last week. Remember the demon-possessed guy? Remember that? When Jesus cast the demon out, it all went into the pigs. The pigs all ran into the lake and all died. And the townspeople came out. And what did they say? Go away. Why? You're damaging our economy. You start changing people's lives,
You start messing with their economy. And Jesus never hid the fact that serving him was filled with struggle. As we've gone through the series, we've emphasized it over and over again that Jesus was both mesmerizing and antagonizing. He drew people like a magnet and he drove them away. And that's just the way it is. If you follow Jesus and you serve Jesus, you will draw people. You will be the smell of life for some and the smell of death for others. And there will be powerful people who will not fall in love with Jesus. And they will do anything and everything possible to derail what you're doing. Now, there will be other powerful people that will fall in love with Jesus, and they will make that work out easier. But the point is, don't be naive. As you serve Jesus, there's going to be opposition. And right now, some of you guys are engaged in ministries where you're coming up against a wall that Satan has thrown in front of you to discourage you and derail you. But that's why John wrote later, greater is he who is in you than he who is in the world. That with Jesus, you have what you need. So don't be surprised at the opposition. It's a spiritual war we're in. Now let's talk about the feeding of the 5,000. All right, this is a great story. It's in all four of the Gospels. Everybody writes about it because it's incredibly important. And in verse 10, it says this. When the apostles returned, they reported to Jesus what they had done. Then he took them with him, and they withdrew by themselves to a town called Bethsaida. I love this. This had to have been written by a man, right? I mean, we know it was Luke. But I mean, because think about it. How does this work? The guy's gone off, big business trip, mission trip, comes back. You ask the guy, hey, how did it go? What does he say? Fine. Right? The average guy says, well, it was really good. And that's what you get right here. Hey, we had a big trip. How'd it go? It was good. All right, look, let's go on a retreat. You know, that's all you get. I mean, it's just nothing there. So Jesus says, okay, let's withdraw. But the crowds learned about it, verse 11, and followed him. He welcomed them and spoke to them about the kingdom of God and all healed and healed those who needed healing. Late in the afternoon, the 12 came to him and said, send the crowd away so that they can go to the surrounding villages and countryside and find food and lodging because we are in a remote place here. And you know what I tend to think is going on right here? Now, I think he emphasized it was the 12. Remember, it was the 12 that went out. Now it's the 12 coming to Jesus. And I think what's been going on is for their whole run so far, it's been Jesus and then the 12. Jesus tells the 12 what to do. But now Jesus has sent them out on mission. And now it's kind of like, now Jesus, we're kind of peers and let us tell you how this thing ought to go, which is always a bad idea, right? But I think they're trying to give him advice on ministry. And so Jesus does, they come and say, hey, we've got a plan. We think these people have needs. We know what to do. Let's send them to the villages. And look at verse 13, you know what goes down here. Jesus says, you give them something to eat. Hey, we got a great idea. We'll go do it. And if you've been around Trinity very long, you know this, right? If people come up to me all the time and they're saying, hey, we've got a great idea. We think we ought to start that. We need this Bible study thing over here. Hey, what about a ministry to one-legged baseball players or whatever it might be? There's all of these things. And so when you come to me with that idea, what do I say? Go for it. Me and Jesus, we have the same plan, right? You know, but I mean, seriously, I mean, that's what he's saying. You see a need? You see something out there that's broken? You see something, that's God calling you into it. You know, when your heart is broken over marriages or your heart is broken over sex trafficking or you see these kids that need to be trained up or you see this problem that needs to be solved, just like these guys, they see the need. Jesus, we got to do something for these people. And Jesus' answer is good. Now that you see it, get engaged in the process. So the need that you see that's not getting met, the need that you're kind of stirred up about, saying, why won't somebody do something? That's Jesus saying, you now get to be part of the game. So step into it, because he's got a plan to provide. Because most of them at that point go, what can I do? But isn't that what they say? Verse 13, they answered, We have only 5 loaves of bread and 2 fish. What can we do? I can't fix this big problem. He says, unless we go buy food for all this, and there's about 5,000 men, which probably means maybe 15, 20,000 people. But he said to his disciples, have them sit in groups, about 50 each. The disciples do so, and everyone sat down, taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, and looking up to heaven, he gave thanks and broke it, passed it out, then he gave them to the disciples to distribute to the people. They all ate, were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 baskets fulls of broken pieces that were left over. So what do we learn? Three quick principles. Number one, even Jesus and the apostles needed a break. Even Jesus and the apostles needed a break. Ministry is some of the hardest work you will ever do. Again, it's not just physical, it's spiritual. There's this emotional engagement. It will wear you out. And when the 12 came back from the demands of this ministry, they needed a time to pull away and recharge their batteries. Self-care, write this down, self-care is not selfish, but for the good of others. Self-care is not selfish, but for the good of others. And now it can become selfish as all you do is take care of yourself. But the idea of what's going on here is Jesus saying, let's pull away for a few minutes. Let's recharge so we can re-enter. Let's step away so we can sharpen the axe. Let's step away so we can take a breath. Let's step away from the demands of the ministry so we can re-enter the ministry. They needed some time alone. In our home, I'm the people person. I love to be out and be with people all the time. My wife is the introvert. And so when she gets overwhelmed, the phrase we use at our house is, I'm peopled out. And that's where these guys are. They were peopled out. They were worn out. And so there's this incredible principle that you give and then you need to receive. You give out, then you need input. You're in public, but then you need private. There's a time with people, but then you need solitude. And you have to put these two things together into a rhythm for your life. But because, see, if all you do, and I use this all the time about, you remember, right? But Stephen, if all you do is give and give and give and give, then eventually you're empty and you can't move. You have to step back and let Jesus restore you. Sometimes you have to step out of that ministry for a season so you can re-enter it with a renewed vision and energy. Sometimes you need to pull apart and put a half a day with God so that you can be restored and be refilled so that you can do that. But in the same way, not only do you need to be recharging, you need to be giving out, because some of you have the other problem. You're learning and learning and learning and taking in it, but you're giving nothing back. And as a result, you're kind of irritated about stuff. The people who are not engaged in the game become the most critical people around. And so you need to give it away. You've got plenty. You know enough. I mean, the truth is, you know more. As a matter of fact, if you've been at this church for more than a year and you sat in on half the messages, you know more than a ton of pastors around this world know. Because you've had great teaching. I know that because I did it. You know. And I don't really mean that as an ego thing. You could have been in any other church in town. You know plenty. Get in the game. Because that's where you're going to meet Jesus. And some of you other guys need to take a break. You're wearing yourselves out. You're going to burn out, and then you're never going to get back in. Which really leads to this next point right here. This is, we need to deal with a lie here, and here it is. Jesus will regularly put you in places that you can't handle, but never any place that he can't. See, there's this lie out there that says Jesus will never give you more than you can handle. Yeah, I think the disciples were pretty much looking at the 5,000, 10,000 going, yeah, we got this. No. This is an impossible situation. Luke makes sure we get it. There's 5,000 men plus. There's maybe 15, 20,000 people here. They're all hungry. They've got a little fish and chips. That's all they've got. And Jesus says, feed them all. Yeah, and I really think the disciples are really trying to love them. They're not trying to get rid of them. They're trying to say they're going to get hungry. Let's feed them. What do we do here? And Jesus says, you feed them. You're concerned about their needs. You feed them. You see the untaught, the unsaved, the lonely, whatever, step into the battle and do it. And our natural response is the same as the disciples, where they're saying, I only have. You know, we've only got this little meager thing. What is that for so many? It won't work. I mean, that's what Moses said, right? God says, go talk to Pharaoh for me. He says, I don't really talk real good. I can't really do that. God says, go. He goes to Isaiah and he says, hey, I need you to be a prophet for me. I'm way too sinful. He goes to Jeremiah and he says, I'm way too young. And we've always got this. I don't have. And so he comes to the disciples. They've gone, we've only got this. Which the funny thing is, it's more than they had on the mission trip. On the mission trip, he said, don't even take a little bag lunch. Now they got a bag lunch to work with. We should always be serving. We should all, now hear this. Maybe I should, let me say it different. Always is too much. We should regularly be serving Christ at the level of our inadequacy. If you are adequate for everything He's got you engaged in today, there's probably some place that you're not moving yet. If you're going to serve Jesus, you can anticipate that at a maddening level, with maddening regularity, He's going to put you into a position that you don't have what it takes. You're going to have obstacles that you can't overcome. You're going to face needs that you can't meet. You're going to face one impossibility after the other, and you're going to constantly feel over your head and over your pay grade. But that's where Jesus wants you. He can handle this. It's no problem. He doesn't need you to do this. Jesus wasn't sitting there going, oh gosh, I sure hope the disciples will help me feed them. No. He was saying, come near. You know why? Because now what happens? They step in and they experience Jesus at a level they've never experienced Him before. He can handle it. What He's trying to do is get you to a place where you have to trust Him, and so that your faith in Him grows, that you say, if He can handle this, He can. If He can feed 5,000, then He can do this thing. If He can provide on this mission trip, He can do this thing. And so that we grow with confidence saying, God can handle it. Now the reality is, when those things come, we almost always shrink up inside going, oh my gosh, it'll never work. And it takes us a little bit. We kind of go, wait a minute, self, talk to me. God can do this. Let's step back into it. And all this is so He gets the glory. Whatever your challenge, He can handle it. One last thought. And that's this, that kingdom leaders use work to get people done instead of using people to get work done. Let me say that again and let it soak in a minute. Kingdom leaders, because that's exactly who Jesus is here, use work to get people done instead of using people to get work done. If we're not careful, we begin to look at the people around us as tools that we can then somehow use to accomplish our great task or program. But that is not at all what Jesus is doing here. Jesus didn't need the 12. He could have done every bit of it Himself. He doesn't need you to accomplish His will. He could do it without you. He invites you in. He calls you in so that you have the experience of seeing God work, and you are closer to Him as a result of that. If we're not careful, especially, we're the ministry leaders. If you're not careful, you make the work or the task or the job or the program the main thing. This is what it's all about. And then you'll burn up and run over and use up people to accomplish this great thing. But that is not at all what Jesus does. It's all about the people and building into them so that the work is the way that God grows them up. And so Jesus will never, ever, ever put you in a ministry just to use you up and toss you aside. You can't outgive Him. Matter of fact, look at verse 17 and how this thing ends. Right? They all ate and were satisfied, and the disciples picked up 12 basketfuls of broken pieces that were left over. And it's a very subtle way where Jesus is saying, don't worry about it. You gave on the trip. We were going away, and all the people showed up, and you've given again. I haven't forgotten you. I'm going to take care of you. Whatever ministry you're in, I'm going to take care of you in the midst of it. And you can trust me to walk with you and provide for you. That's really what He's saying. Some of you guys, you know what? Let me just wrap it up this way. Because I want to come back to where this whole thing started. And that is, you guys are amazing. I mean, as I just look across this room, I just see story after story after story of sacrificial things, of people being willing to stay up into the middle of the night to make something happen, people going into the very tough relational problems and loving in on that deal, and people weighing in to care for kids. And I mean, you guys are truly, truly amazing. And this city would be at a loss if God were to suddenly take this church out of its midst. You're amazing. Because you keep stepping into impossible things and trusting Jesus to provide. And He's feeding multitudes through you. And every time I think about you, I just thank God for you. May your tribe increase. May you multiply and experience the joy of God. And may you feel now, not just in the future, may you feel now that sense of Jesus saying, "Well done, good and faithful servants." Let's pray.